His first hour today, we commence. That's the B side of this hour. I'm jumping ahead of myself. That's the B side, that conversation, the B side of this hour. We commence today's show, having said that, talking politics with Dr. Nicordalai Corte, the Chief National Political Affairs Analyst for KBLA Talk 1580, my hometown station here in LA, where Dr. Corte is also host of his own daily show called A More Perfect Union. Dr. Corte, how are you today, sir?
I'm doing well. How are you, Tevin?
If I complained, I'd be an ingrate. You know me, man. I'm just pushing through, powering through, and always honored to be in conversation with you. It is hard to know where to begin because there's so much news today. I think I want to do this. Let me just give a rundown of the things I hope to cover with you in these 30 minutes, and when we come forward, we'll let you jump straight away into it. Let me link a few things, first of all, regarding the Middle East. That story continues to develop. So there was a piece that just came out in the New York Times that Biden is about Biden being outraged by what's happening in the Middle East. That's his word. He's outraged. But is he willing to use America's leverage with Israel? There are people asking serious questions about whether or not and when, in fact, he will move beyond the rhetoric and start to use our leverage in this unending crisis. Connected to that, there's a story out today that the White House invited Muslim community leaders to dinner celebrating Ramadan. And guess what happened? A whole bunch of them declined the president's invitation to the White House. Now, I've been invited to the White House more times than I can count. It always takes a little bit of nerve to turn the president down for an invitation to the White House, but a whole lot of Muslim leaders did that when invited to celebrate Ramadan. There's also a story out today that Jill Biden, the first lady, has privately encouraged the president, urged him to stop the war. And so the White House is downplaying today and denying that there's any difference between their two positions. But the story's out that the First Lady is encouraging the president to do his part to help end this war and not just continue with the rhetoric. That's just at the top of my list. There's other stuff to cover. I'm glad I've got Dr. Nicordalai Corte right now on Tavis Smile.
Hope, agency, dignity. This is Tavis Smiley. Let's get back to more of this rich dialogue with Tavis Smiley.
All right, Dr. Corte, let's jump right in here and make the most of the time that we have here. So this week, the White House canceled, as you know, a planned Ramadan dinner after many Muslim American leaders refused to attend that gathering, as the Biden administration indicates its plans to continue arming Israel, never mind the rhetoric. And so on Tuesday, a scaled-back meeting was held with Muslim American community figures, and that meeting itself was met with protest. There was a doctor, a Palestinian American emergency room physician, in that meeting who handed the president a letter from an 8-year-old orphaned girl, a Palestinian girl, and the letter simply read, "I beg you, President Biden, stop them from entering Rafah." This physician handed that letter to President Biden and then turned out and walked out of the room, left the White House. Again, that's a bold move, but the president is hearing it from a lot of sources, a lot of different places and spaces, including, we are told, from the First Lady, who's encouraging him to do more to stop this war. Your thoughts?
I mean, you know, Tavis, this is an increasing challenge for the president abroad and at home. You know, abroad, we know that the strike that killed a group of aid workers in Gaza, mm-hmm. You know, has really got a lot of people's attention at home and abroad. The Biden administration shows no sign that it's considering conditioning military aid to Israel as a consequence. And so the question is, well, what is the consequence? Mm-hmm. What's the consequence for operating outside of international norms, for operating outside of international law? The Biden administration, President Biden himself, has said that Israel is not doing enough to protect humanitarian aid workers. And so the question then is, well, what is the United States prepared to do abroad? Meanwhile, back at home, just this week, we had primary elections in places like Wisconsin, where the movement to protest President Biden at the primary ballot box in response to his handling of the war in Gaza exceeded its own expectations. More than 90% of the votes counted the uninstructed option on the Democratic presidential primary ballot. It garnered more than 47,000 votes. That's according to the Associated Press. It's just over 8% of the Democratic presidential primary vote counted so far. I know they're still counting votes there. And so this is a problem. This is a problem that the president cannot ignore. And, you know, it seems to many that the president is coming off, or his core team is coming off as a little tone deaf in terms of taking some action. We understand that, you know, the geopolitics in the region are challenging. If we were to stop sending bombs to Israel, well, what happens if there is a sudden attack from Iran or one of the neighboring countries there, right? And so it's not just about Israel and Gaza, but it's about the region. But this president, this White House, needs to level with the American people and take the American people on the journey, because if not, there are a lot of folks that fear that this movement to protest Biden at the primary box could cost him the election in November.
Yeah. We are a nation, for better or worse, that loves gossip. Let's just be honest about it. We love hearing these sort of interesting stories, particularly if they're stories that come from pillow talk. And I use the phrase pillow talk respectfully, given that we're talking about the president and the first lady. But this story out now that the first lady has been encouraging him to do more to stop the war. Just because you're a couple doesn't mean you have to agree on everything. And she has her own mind and she has agency, and they've been together for a lot of years. So I can imagine this ain't the first time they've disagreed on something. But when a story like this breaks in the news that the president is getting advice from his wife, from the first lady, to do something different than what he's already doing, you read those kinds of stories when they come out, how?
I read those stories as somebody leaked that, if it's true, to signal to the American people that there are voices inside the White House that are highly influential that hear them clearly. I mean, you know, Tavis, just a few weeks ago when I was in L.A., the First Lady attended the Human Rights Campaign dinner that I had a chance to attend, and there were protesters that interrupted her speech. You know, and, you know, when the protesters were moved out of the room, she went on to sort of talk about when she and the president first met. And she sort of painted a picture of somebody, you know, who was more of a hippie and anti-war and, you know, was down with the women's rights movement. You know, those were Dr. Joe Biden's politics before she met our now president, Joe Biden. And so I'm not surprised if that is true, given what she shared at that HRC dinner. And the question is, how effective will she be, and other voices that are saying, Mr. President, you got to do something. We can't just, you know, berate Benjamin Netanyahu and Israel, you know, when something goes wrong. There, if there is no consequence, I think there are some that may rightfully believe that this will continue.
Yeah. Let me pivot ever so gently, because I think these things are connected, because the president, there's a poll out on the one hand that suggests that Donald Trump is leading Joe Biden in 6 of 7 swing states. We're going to talk on the backside of this hour with Jeet here from The Nation magazine about his piece out now in The Nation called Why Silicon Valley Reactionaries Love RFK Jr. Why do I raise that? Because news came earlier this week, as I mentioned earlier, that RFK Jr.'s campaign has announced they've qualified for the ballot with signatures they need in North Carolina, one of those swing states. So again, there's a poll out that suggests that Donald Trump at this moment is leading Joe Biden in 6 of those 7 swing states. Michigan, of course, would be one of those, and that's what we connect that obviously to this issue in the Middle East because of the significant population of Muslim Americans in the state of Michigan. Joe Biden only won that state by 3 points the last time. It was close then. He's going to spend a lot of time, I predict, between now and November, going back and forth to the state of Michigan to see if he can turn the tide on this particular story. That said, the poll on the one end suggests that Trump is leading him again in 6 of 7 swing states. But there's another story out today, a big story, with Simon Rosenberg, who is really the only pollster that I can recall who in 2022 said that there isn't going to be a big red wave. He was very clear about that and very public. There will be no red wave. Everybody was predicting, as you recall, on the quarter line, a red wave in those midterm elections. He's the one pollster that stood out and said, it is not going to happen. And lo and behold, Simon Rosenberg was right. It did not happen. Big interview out with him today where he's saying that people should calm down, that Joe Biden is going to win this election. He lays out all the reasons why he believes that the president is going to win this election. And in this interview, by the way, this is a Washington Post, New York Times piece out today. But in this piece, he says that he sees Gaza as an issue, the war that is, an issue for the president to manage. But I don't see it as a threat to his reelection. Those are his words. It's an issue to manage, but he doesn't see it as a threat to his reelection. How would you respond to those comments from Simon Rosenberg, who did call this thing right in 2022?
I would respond to that by reminding our listeners that President Biden came out of retirement to run for president in 2020, pledging to restore the soul of the nation. That was a clarion call to moral leadership, bringing some moral leadership back to the Oval Office, you know, restoring, you know, some dignity to the office of the White House. I think there are a number of voters that may not be all that motivated to support the president, in part because they don't see that stark moral leadership on what has become, you know, one of the most glaring moral issues of our time, the conflict between Israel and Gaza. And so it's off brand, you know, for the president to not be asserting some moral leadership, you know, on, you know, what is, you know, one of the major humanitarian crises and military conflicts in the world right now that America's a part of. And so, you know, will President Biden sort of squeak by in November? It's absolutely possible, you know, but, you know, is he making his reelection harder than it needs to be? That's also quite possible.
Yep. There are a number of reasons, since I teed this up, let me take the next step. There are a number of reasons why Simon Rosenberg in this piece today suggests that he believes that Joe Biden will, in fact, win this election, and we should all calm down about Armageddon heading our way come November. These are just a few of the reasons. One, he argues that Donald Trump is a much weaker candidate this time around than he was when he beat Hillary. He's a much weaker candidate for a variety of reasons. I think you take that point. Secondly, he points to all the data in the primary season that we're still in. Frankly, it ain't quite over yet, even though both Biden and Trump have secured the delegates they need to be the presumptive nominees of their party. We're not quite there yet. But in the primaries that have already happened, the data is clear that Donald Trump has underperformed. Yes, he's won, but he's underperforming, secondly, in all these primaries. Number three, to the point you sort of mentioned a moment ago, he argues the president's got a strong case to make. He has done well as president. He's stewarded the economy, brought this country back from the brink, restored our respect, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. There is a strong case to make, and as this campaign starts to get into high gear, the president will make that case, and the American people will hear it and respond. And fourthly, again, there are more than these arguments, but these are the four that jump out at me right quick. The president, as you know, is outraising Donald Trump and the Republican Party like crazy. They raised all that money, what, $25 million in one night in New York the other night when he, the president, and former presidents Obama and Clinton were on stage together. That's a lot of money for one night. But the Democrats, which is usually not the case, they are far outraising Republicans in this campaign. So there are just four of the reasons that Simon Rosenberg says that indicate to him that Joe Biden is, in fact, in November going to pull this off, never mind all the polls and all the surveys and all the stories. And as David Plouffe would say, all the Democratic bedwetting that we are engaging in right now. Simon Rosenberg says, as my grandmother would say, let your heart lay down. Your response.
Let your heart lay down. Oh, my goodness. Well, I don't think it's going to be easy for people to let their heart lay down because it still feels like with all of that, all those reasons that support the reelection of President Biden and Vice President Harris, it still feels to so many as if they are making their reelection bid harder than it needs to be. Uninspiring young people to get behind them enthusiastically. And so they've got some work to do. And it's work that's not for the faint of heart. Like I said, it is quite possible that President Biden and Vice President Harris win re-election. All right. The question is, by what margin? The question is, you know, how do they inspire more enthusiasm among the Biden-Harris coalition that they assembled in 2020? And, you know, more to put it frankly, how do they get out of their own way? Because there seems to be a few examples that are pulling focus from an otherwise pretty strong record to run on. Look, everything is not perfect. Everyone's not feeling that breathing room that President Biden so often talked about. There's plenty of work to do, but as we do this look back and look forward, I think there are a number of folks, both Democrat and Republican, that would love to be able to run on the record that the president and Democrats have as a progress report to say, hey, reelect us for four more years.
Yep. And finally here, I asked this question of others because it's becoming increasingly a critical question. I've not asked it of you on this program, so let me ask it of you now, given that you are the chief national political affairs analyst for my home station in L.A. You cover these issues better than anybody I know. And the question is simply how you are reading the tea leaves on these independent candidates. I think I can say this. I haven't cleared it yet, but I'm going to say it anyway. I received a phone call. I was on a call with my friend, Dr. Cornel West, in the last 24 hours, and he has made it clear to me that he has now chosen his running mate. He has now selected who his running mate is going to be as vice president, and we're just trying to work out some particulars, but I think that announcement will be made on this program next week. I think his very first interview making that announcement of who his running mate will be will happen on this program next week. He may even be in L.A. in studio, but that announcement is forthcoming, I'm told, sometime next week, and I expect it to be made on this program. If we can work out those details, we shall see. But I raise that because Bobby Kennedy, RFK Jr., has already chosen his running mate. It is a Silicon Valley executive. We'll talk about that again in just about 3 minutes from now on the backside of this hour. But the fact that RFK is qualified for the ballot in North Carolina, and Cornel West tells me he expects to qualify for the ballot in 35 to 40 states by the time this is all said and done, this third-party candidate issue is going to resonate significantly this time around. In 2 minutes, how significantly do you expect it to, in fact, resonate this election?
I think the one thing that's not clear is how many of the uncommitted voters are willing to commit to independent candidates, right? And so they're saying, hey, we're withholding our vote from Biden until he changes course on principally Gaza, but it could be a number of other issues because we can't assume that these uncommitted voters are single-issue voters. And so it's not clear to me how many of them might be interested in Dr. West or Jill Stein or RFK Jr. But that is a consideration. It's got to be a consideration out there. You know, last I checked, the Emerson survey said that another 6% of folks that they were undecided, while independent candidates, Cornel West and Green Party candidate Jill Stein, each got 1% in that poll. And so, right, you know, will adding a VP pick, you know, make a big difference? Possibly, but there's still a long way. It's a long way, Tavis, yeah, until the convention. It's a long way till November.
Nicolai Corte and I will be together with other colleagues in Chicago this summer for the Democratic National Convention. I look forward to hanging out with him for the week in my favorite city of Chicago. Just a final footnote, I made this point on this program maybe yesterday, earlier this week. Experts tell us, and he quarterlies, you well know, that this election will ultimately be decided by about 3 million people in six swing states, about 3 million people, rather, in these six swing states. And so I don't know if all the rest of our votes are actually wasted for Trump or Biden. If it comes down to 3 million people in six swing states, we shall see. But for now, I thank Dr. Nicolai Corte, the chief national political affairs analyst from my home station in L.A., KBLA Talk 1580, and host of his own program on that station, A More Perfect Union, heard weekdays at 1 p.m. Pacific time. Dr. Corte, good to have you on, my friend. All the best to you, sir.
Thank you, Tavis.
We'll talk to Jeet here, national affairs correspondent for The Nation magazine, about why these Silicon Valley reactionaries love RFK Jr. when we come forward on Tavis Smiley.
What's your quarrel with the world? You're listening to Tavis Smiley.